There's some stories that can't be told, and a couple that probably shouldn't be told.
I mean, might tell anyway, because fuck it. Yeah, might.
So, do you think Babe Ruth would have been a Slayer fan?
That day, he would have.
I didn't want to be around people then. I really don't want to be around them now.
Exactly.
Fucking people suck, man.
Wow, I mean, that's so angry.
Because he's a writing guy.
Hey, this is Party Like a Rockstar podcast, and I'm your host, Joel. Today's episode is brought to you by Misha's Kind Foods. They're an LA-based small business making the world's finest non-dairy cheese on the market today. They're lactose-free, paleo, keto, kosher, perev, and 100% vegan. If you like what you see, check out the next video. If you like this video, please subscribe and like by clicking the little round button on the bottom right. To learn more about me or our other guests on the show, go to joelrody.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. The handle is Joel Rody. If you haven't already read my book, Memoir of a Rody, it's now available through Amazon in paperback, Kindle, or as an audiobook. I hope you enjoy the show.
Hold on, we got another guest.
Uh-oh.
Oh, Lord.
Here he comes.
Jason, my former roommate, turned lighting guru.
I needed a Jason, lighting guy here to.
Gotta get a lighting guy.
Sound fuckers.
I mean, we had to bring the intelligence level in the room down a little bit.
Oh, that's so uncalled for. So uncalled for.
The sad part is I don't even know if he heard me because he's not all the way in yet.
Well, I spent half of the interview so far in the bathroom. So.
Well, I told Joel before you hopped on. Attaboy was when he was 19 was my roommate in Columbus.
Yep.
Yeah, there he is.
On my second tour ever.
Longfeld.
What's going on?
You're like in a haze. Is there? Okay, there we go. I'm like, there's a lot of weed in that room, attaboy.
Yeah.
You're having fun over there. You sure you have time for us?
Dumping. There we go.
All right, we needed help, attaboy. These guys keep talking about boring sound shit. It's been awful.
Well, lighting guy coming in hot, buddy.
Yeah, come on.
Bring it.
I'm gonna.
So we gotta start talking typo stories and stuff like that there, Chad.
That's what I don't know if you heard me. You were on my second tour ever. That was that typo tour was my second, the second artist I worked for. But
yeah.
That holy shit. Typo might have been I might have ran into you way back then. At that point,
well, I didn't work for Typo. I was working for a band called The Deadlights.
And again, that name is familiar as well.
Yeah,
it was a package deal because it was Typo Negative and Cold Chamber, and then we had The Deadlights and Full Devil Jacket. Yep. So, with having four bands, we were able to carry lights and sound. So it was two trucks of production, and then the crew buses.
Yep.
So. There was a lot of fucking buffoonery that happened. You know, we got away with a lot of shit on that tour that I probably did with anything else.
That tour was something else. There's some stories that can't be told and a couple that probably shouldn't be told.
I mean, might tell anyway, because fuck it.
Yeah,
I let him know our relationship that started with the apartment behind the whiskey still. But other than that, you know.
Whoa, hold on. No, I like my spirits. So you got like really a whiskey? Was it just a shitty bar or something?
No, that was the bar.
It was called
That was the bar that turned into the after hours bar when we left the bar that we worked at.
You guys both worked at the same bar together?
Yeah.
Well,
dude, this is funny, Attaboy. It's like these podcasts keep turning into like a trip down Attaboy memory lane. I don't know, you know, because I'm
kind of like herpes for fucking podcasts, buddy. I just fucking keep coming in when you least expect it. Fucking.
Yeah, I'll be like, just take over the reins. We can have Chad throw up memes. They have Attaboy ask the questions. And I could just do nothing. I'm good at that, by the way.
And I can just sit here with a cat.
Yeah, the cat loves you, dude.
No, you don't understand. She beyond loves me. She's in love with me.
So when you lived with Attaboy, was it the same relationship as with the cat? Was he as nice as the cat is?
I didn't sit on his lap, I can tell you that.
Exactly. No, he had his own
room. Didn't work out.
He had his own room. I slept on the couch.
We had the Saint Bernard. Was it the Saint Bernard?
Yes, that's right. We did have my first Saint Bernard there.
And the fucking rabbit.
The rabbit from hell, yes.
Yeah, because if you had cords around, like fat phone cords, you know, back in the day when you still had fucking house phones.
The rabbit
would eat everything.
Any cord that was plugged in, if it was a 120 volt cord, he bit through it. If it was a phone cord and it had 8 volts running through it, he ate it. If it was a cord that had no voltage running through it, he left it alone.
How did you get a pet rabbit? Why did you go get a rabbit?
It was a gift or a rescue or something of the sort. But
you didn't
get a bleeding heart, and we ended up picking it in.
Again, hence why I still am surrounded by
animals. Well, half the roommates we took in were fucking, you know, bleeding heart fucking take-ins, man. I mean, it's like
you're right.
Were they rodents?
Well, people that worked in Columbus. And it was like, how between roommates had that apartment?
There was only ever 2 people on the lease, but you know, at one point in time, there was probably 7 people that were using it as their mailing address.
I thought it was like 10 or 12 because it was like 10 years. That place has been around for 10 years between people moving in and out, re-moving in, and then, you know, needing a place to stay, and all of a sudden they're full-timers, and then, you know.
Yeah, again, they just kept recycling the lease. One person's name would leave, one person's name would come on. Whatever.
I mean, it's like the same thing, like, you know, when you have other places like Hollywood and all those places where everybody, you know, people from the industry would just fucking pretty much roommate up.
Yeah, but it's fucking expensive to live in L.A.
Fuck, you know. Well, that's the whole thing.
On our salaries, it was expensive to live in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah. It's like, and when you're drinking most of it or smoking most of it.
Exactly.
You know,
again, you're fucked. We all went to the whiskey still after we got done working.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. I mean, see, I remember going to Hooters had just opened up in Columbus in 1994. And I remember they used to have 10 cent wings from 3 to 6 and 10 to close.
Nice.
$2, you could get, you know, fucking 20 wings.
All right, times have fucking changed.
Fuck yeah, they have. But that was the whole thing. It's like, so you went to Hooters or someplace like that, fucking load up, and then, hey.
Action and his BW3 Wild Wings.
Yeah,
well, only things leftovers in the refrigerator ever.
Yeah. Well, that's because we were going to bury him in a pizza box with fucking bones, you know, chicken bones in the end. Our other main roommate between him. So Rand, the last 3 guys in this room in this apartment was me, Tim, and Randy Wilson, or Action as we called him. Yeah. And we in 96.
And a couple of stray girls.
A couple of our waitresses had worked at the Al Rosa and shit like that. It was all Al Rosa Villa, Newport, you know, music hall related.
April and Kathy. I remember that now.
So but in the end, I was actually the last guy in because Randy got hired. Well, when I was talking with you, Rocco Reedy had hired Randy to go on the Kiss tour when they were going on the 96 reunion tour. Tim gets hired by Eighth Day Sound and he splits. So I remember I'm the guy that walked in, you know, kind of like one of those sitcom shows when you're the last guy walking out of the empty apartment. You know, before it's all done, after all these years of this place changing hands and people being in and out, which is a good thing because somebody got blown away down the aisle, you know, about a week before that. So it was time to go. You know, that complex.
Again, and that neighborhood has not gotten better. It has simply gotten worse.
The little Mogadishu, really.
I want to take a moment because I'm just going to correct this, and I'm going to make a statement because a lot of people
resume.
I have never actually worked for Eighth Day Sound. They've sub hired me to do gigs for them.
Yeah.
But I've never been an employee of that company. And so there was no, again, Eighth Day provided for Slayer for a long time because I have friends there. But there was never, yeah, it's, I'm still friends with them, even now that they've all merged. It's now like we're all becoming more friends. Again, I have friends in the Claire business. I know friends from Shoko. It was just my cup of tea. You know, they were local and they had opportunity. So that was how that ended up. But it wasn't ever an employee kind of thing. I never went in there and I went to a job interview, but I walked out without a job.
Yeah,
that was the point. It was like, no, I'm not, because they were like, hey, we're going to send you to truck driving school as soon as you become an employee. Great. I don't want to ever drive a truck, so I'm not going to do that. Thanks. That was it. Hey, will you still come help us out on gigs? Sure. As long as I don't have to drive the truck.
I like that. When you were living with Tim, attaboy, you wanted to be a sound guy back then, or you were doing lights?
So, yeah, I mean, I started because I wanted to be a sound guy, and that was the whole thing.
Right.
And I mean, and this is where, once again, it goes back to crack. Crack made me a lighting guy. You know, and people are like, what the fuck? And I'm like, yeah, it's like, you know, because I went to recording engineering school. I went to the recording workshop in Chillicothe, Ohio. And then I was calling around Columbus looking for places to gig. And, of course, Midwest town, I mean, everybody's got their own thing, but, you know, they don't have budget to hire anybody else. They're just barely pulling it by themselves. But Rick Catello, who owned the club, I was up there and I was talking to the guys what I was doing. And they're like, Rick, seeing an opportunity for free labor, offered me that intern. You know, so that was the whole thing, was like, hey, kid, you know, we'll have you, you know, come up here and you can, you know, help Laverne, who was the house sound guy up there at the time. And it's like, you know, maybe learn something. And within being there for several months, and then, you know, somebody with a, you know, that, you know, which sucks. I mean, you know, they had an addiction problem and split the scene, and they didn't have anybody that could do lights, and they offered it to me. And I'm like, yeah, sure. So, you know, but that was the whole thing. I mean, I wanted to be a sound guy, and then,
yeah,
you know, the lighting, you know, it just, because of that, you know, detour, and no, offering to be paid.
Hindsight? No, you didn't. It's okay.
You would have taken all their jobs. Tim and Chad would never work again. You'd be taking all the gigs.
No, I'm happy with my life, the way my direction went.
Good.
I don't think I'd be the person I'd be had I tried to do anything else, to tell you the truth.
That same here, yeah.
Again, that's right. We all kind of fell into what we are supposed to be doing. That's one thing that I can say about the other guests here. We're all doing exactly what we are supposed to be doing. There's really no other option. It's just right. Like now, you know, everybody's like, oh, what are you going to go get a job? And I was like, maybe. Well, what are you going to do? I'm going to go work for the Metro Parks. Oh, so you can work with people? No, so I can work the night shift and clean trees off and not deal with people. Thank you very much. I'll deal with the animals. It's fine. Got a house full of them.
Dude, in this day and age, it's even worse now. It's like, I didn't want to be around people then. I really don't want to be around them now.
Exactly.
Fucking people suck, man.
Wow, I mean, I'm so angry.
Because he's a lighting guy.
Oh, attaboy, and I had wonderful times together.
Oh, yeah. No, it's one of those things where it's just like, everybody's got a stick up their ass today. And it's just like, hey, man, hey, fuck you. I mean, really. I mean, just get over it. Break it off and keep walking. You know? But they can't let it go.
Lightning guys talk a lot, Chad, just so you know.
Last time I saw Attaboy, we were in Australia, weren't we?
I think actually I saw you at was it the Tour Link thing down in
oh, Tucson. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
I'll be right back.
All right. Yeah, I think you're right. Tourlink. That was the last time. Not, but before that would have been Australia, I think, where you mean Mike Amato sat in some hotel in Adelaide, maybe?
I think so. Yeah.
It wasn't one of the big cities. It was either Adelaide or Perth.
Yeah. I think it was Adelaide.
Yeah. Soundwave? Or was that Big Day Out?
Oh, fuck. I can't remember.
Yeah.
It's like, I remember.
What are you guys working on now?
What's that?
Actually, what were you going to say? If it was something interesting, you can say it.
No, I think the tour that me and Chad did, it was called the Road Rage Tour, you know, funny enough.
I still have the t-shirt.
Yeah. And I think I was in Melbourne and I went by some like art store or something or that had, you know, artwork or whatever. And they had, and I bought it. You know how they make like custom made poster, rock posters for advertisements for shows? Yeah. For some odd reason.
A bunch of them right back there.
Yeah. For some reason, they had one from the Cleveland Agora for that tour.
Oh, no shit.
In Australia. And it was a print like number 121 out of, you know, 1,000. But in fucking Australia, out of all places.
Oh, that's a great tour
that we did. I picked that up and I was like, you know, that was, I'm like, what the? All the way down here? What the fuck?
That's a great thing.
Yeah, but yeah, it was neat. And that was the thing. So I'm trying to go back with that because there was a lot of cool people on that tour.
And oh, I can name about 90% of them just off the top of my head. Yeah. I still talk to almost everybody.
By the way, turn your ringer off because it's gonna be a bitch for me to edit that out.
Yeah, fucking somebody fucking texting my ass.
I've turned into a sound guy, Chad. Fucking turn that shit off. Don't roll over my cable, motherfucker.
Yeah, because that tour was Amato was your TM, Andy Meyer was your PM front of house, monitors was Polly. I can't remember his last name from Ohio.
Polly Paulson, I think it was Paulson.
That might be it. Yeah, that sounds about right. Your LD was Schlitzy, Jeremy.
Yep.
Jed with Cold Chamber. Jed was with Cold Chamber. Wedge was with Cold Chamber. I don't remember the Cold Chamber TM off the top of my head.
Well, it changed because first
it ended up being Steve Kidd.
Yeah, because it was originally Sharon Osbourne was managing them, and it was who came in. It was Eddie Kircher was first out there for like.
Was it Kircher?
Yeah, for the first couple like week or two or a couple
weeks. I'm going to have to text that fucker after because I didn't realize we had done that tour together. I thought I didn't meet him till Deftones.
Yeah, and then something happened with them and Sharon's management. But since Sharon hired him, but he went away with that whole deal because, you know, being hey, you know, she hired him, she left with him.
Yep.
Or he left with her. But yeah, man, it was just the buffoonery on that thing is, dude, I mean, we got away with more. I saw more shit on that tour than most things I've ever seen. Because we're just doing clubs. We're doing theaters, clubs, all sorts of shit. We played
everything from the tiniest shithole. Well, not tiniest shithole. From like, what would you say? Probably like, we did New Orleans House of Blues, which is like an 800-seater.
Dude, we did Skate World, Boise, Idaho.
That's true, we did.
Yep. You know, it's like, you know, the guys that are fucking lighting guys are fucking getting high and fucking and playing with a DJ booth in the fucking skate rink. You know, that was the only lighting we had. And I basically stood up some towers and put them on a DMXer and just flashed between blue, green, and red, you know, all one channel. And that's one which we did. That day sucked. I mean, it was funny. I mean,
well, we had a great day off the day before because I played golf with Mike and Andy the day before in Boise.
Yeah,
day off. It was actually a really fun day off.
Yeah, it was. But going back to the House of Blues in New Orleans, because it was Jerry, I think. There was still our opening bands were, you know, they were up and coming.
He's got sound on. Attaboy.
I know it's fucking damn fucking things.
It's funny because it beeps when you're talking, which means I can't fucking cut it.
you know, it was.
It's funny because it's true. Like, sound guys have shitty sound when they come on a lot of the time, and lighting guys are fucking terrible. It just looks like shit back there. It's actually me and Attaboy here. It's pretty dark in here too. So yeah. Anyway, sorry, Attaboy, you were saying something.
We were so some of the younger bands were pretty cocky in terms of their attitudes and shit like that. And we're like, oh, we got to take these guys down a peg. And it was Jerry that was with Deadlights. We were like, we're going to fuck with this guy. You know, so, because, you know, he'd go up, you know, they'd be like really macho, this and that, and trying to put on the whole metal persona when they're doing things. So we went down to a sex shop down the street off of Bourbon Street and shit. And this, you know, this stupid little thing, you know, we buy like, you know, white wrapped his microphone in a white or a pink feather boa, but then we zip tied it so he couldn't rip it off the fucking mic stand. I mean, shit like that would flip him out. So it's like when he went out to the mic stand, wouldn't sing in it, refused to sing in it, would fucking knock it over. One of the guys would go fucking, you know, bring it back up. He'd just knock it over again. He just wouldn't sing that night. So like, oh, he really doesn't like being wound up. So the next day, or there was within a couple of days, we played Houston. And I rigged the downstage truss instead of like where you could actually use it. You know, I actually rigged it above the rim, was almost right above the band's heads. And we had bought like a 12-inch dildo to have. And what I did was we rigged it to where I had like, you know,
the funny is he already had like a suitcase of them, but he bought it. Right. Yeah, probably. Yeah, but anyway, yeah.
So
who took it home after the tour? That's what I was.
Well,
we all know.
Yeah. We rigged it off of the truss. So during the show, it was rigged right above him where he couldn't see it, but it was constantly bobbing up and down above his head. And eventually the crowd started pointing at him. You know, he's fucking rocking out, thinking everybody's like looking at him and thinking it's great. Until he figures out within a couple songs that his fucking dildo was just doing an accordion above his head the whole time. So he finally cons it to, you know, whoever. I had a local rigger on a rope and a headset that was doing it. We were just kind of directing him. So the guy brings it in off for Jerry. Jerry gets a hold of it, fucking pulls it apart, throws it in the crowd. Fucking and just pissed off and he's just storming around the rest
that's
of the time.
That's the whole story. There is these cheap ass fucking dildos that are easy to rip apart. That's bullshit.
So I guess so they were doing like, I guess they signed stuff afterwards after their set. Some kid in the crowd had grabbed a dildo and fucking took it up to him to sign it for him.
Nice.
You know, so you know, and that was his souvenir of the Deadlights, was to have those guys sign it.
Did he sign it?
I don't know if he, I don't know. I don't think Jerry did.
I don't think he did. No, I think he was pretty pissed. Like,
he was pretty pissed a lot when we fucked with him.
Yeah.
But who was on the walking? You know, I just dildo up, dildo down, dildo down.
Yeah. You know, we're all we're dying because, you know, it's like he has no idea, you know, and it was just the windups would get this worse, worse and worse. I mean, then when we were in Salt Lake City, I think his mom came to the show. And we invited his mom onto our bus for drinks.
Oh, Jesus. And they were like, that.
Hey, yeah. I was like, hey, he's like, dude, you got your mom in the back, literally. It's like, yeah, he wasn't too happy about that either. But, you know,
I still talk to him once in a while.
Dude, I know that he had an issue with alcohol and stuff like that. And then he's
been sober for a while now. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like doing really good. So yeah. I'm glad to see you still, you know, out there doing it, man.
He's playing with Stephen Piercy now.
That's cool.
He's doing that rat. I don't know what the hell you want. Stephen Piercy. I don't know. You know, it's rat without the rest of rat.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I talked to him. I don't talk to him super often, but I talked to him. We were in LA. We did a Fall Out Boy, Green Day, Weezer at the Whiskey, which is, yeah. They said it all. Yeah. three arena acts playing the Whiskey on the same night. It actually ended up being really a cool, fun time.
I would have watched.
Well, it was actually from an audio standpoint, it was super easy because we were told you use the whatever the X32 or M32 or whatever the house desk was. That's all of us. That's your desk.
That's exactly, and then that would have been fine. The rest, yeah. I'll watch.
Yeah, no, it was. It worked. Greg Dean was Green Day's production manager at the time. He crushed it. He had a great plan, and you know, we all did our parts to execute the plan, and it worked well. But that was the last time I saw Jerry in person. So it was like 2019, I guess it was, like September of 19. Mm-hmm. Was the last time I saw him in person. But yeah, I still talk to him through Facebook and whatnot every now and then, or I'll get we'll get the random text message. But yeah, he's doing really well. He's been clean and sober now for, I don't remember. He just had his sober anniversary like just recently, and I'm probably lying. I think it was like 7 or 8 years he's been sober.
Yeah. Because he's the only one I've ever seen from the band. Because I know Duke passed away.
Yeah, Duke passed away. Jim owns a. I don't know if it's full-on construction or if it's just remodeling. But he basically does high-end kitchens and baths in, he's like, where is he? He's like Orange County somewhere.
Oh, I need his phone number.
I'll give it to you, yeah.
Yeah, I'm serious. I do. I need it. I'm looking to do a kitchen right now. I've actually just been getting quotes all week, so that's nice. Actually good to know.
I'll get it. I'll get his info for you.
Okay, thank you.
And Billy, the guitar player, just finished living up here in New Hampshire. He just moved from New Hampshire. I think he's down in Georgia now. He just moved like 2 or 3 weeks ago down to Georgia. Hmm. So yeah, I still talk to those dudes, you know, with the exception of Duke, not regular, but every now and then.
Yeah. It's good to hear they're still kicking around.
Yeah. And actually, like I said, I still talk to almost that entire crew base from that tour. Jed, I talked to still, Jeremy, Andy, Wedge, Amato, Brad Judd, Moby, Billy Page.
Billy used to make daiquiris for us before the show because Billy was the drum tech for Josh Silver. Not Josh Silver, for John Kelly. And he used to make some wicked daiquiris, man. I think it was the only time I've ever been on tour and actually drank, you know, during the show, because there wasn't that much to it. You know, you could kind of get it.
Pretty simple, yeah.
Yeah, you could kind of get away with murder on that one.
Yeah. And then, and I still talk to Les as well, Josh's tech.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still talk to almost everybody from that tour. It's one of the few tours that I stayed in touch with pretty much everybody from.
Polly, who was the monitor engineer for Type O, Polly's fucking, he could outrun the PA with his cue edge.
So loud.
Yeah, we played some fucking shithole up. Where the fuck were we? It was like where Muhammad Ali had a fight or something. It was the old arena that had just nothing but mud all around it and shit. And we played there. And I'm out in front of house, and I'm, you know, listening to the show when it's going on. And all of a sudden, I hear this extra shit kick in. And all it is fucking Paulie's monitor wedge that he uses when he would fucking solo something out. And then all of a sudden, you could hear outrunning, you know, the PA. And then it's like, Jesus Christ, dude, you're deaf as fuck.
Try having a monitor engineer with 4 M2 wedges as cues.
No, thank you.
Nah.
Every time he queued something up, my system tech was like, yeah, go tell him. Yeah, it's louder than the PA. The PA didn't just get louder on the right side. It's him. Just go unplug his shit.
All right, Tim, some questions. So these guys have been forced to answer my question. Attaboy, twice. If you guys have another one, you're welcome to tell it. So my question is, I was putting together a podcast in the beginning here, and my friend has a daughter in fifth grade, and she had her little girlfriends over. And so collectively, they came up with a question that they said I should ask every guest. And the question was, when did you first feel famous? And so my question to you is, when did you first feel famous? Now, bear in mind, this is coming from a little kid. So if you want to change the answer to the question to be an integral part of your career or a moment that was important to you or something along those lines, you're welcome to do so. But I found some very good answers based off of this young lady's question. So, and attaboy and Chad, if you guys have a different one you want to pick, go for it.
I'm going to say that, I've never been famous, almost famous, almost all the time. But
the rabbit thought you were famous.
The rabbit did think, yeah, you know.
Two strippers.
No. No, they knew better. No, because I had no money.
That's what no game part came in.
You know, again, I will honestly say probably the highlight of my career, or the day that I walked away from a gig and actually said, wow, I just did something that most won't do in their lives, was mixing Yankee Stadium.
That's neat.
And that was in 2011. I still have the, I'm just going to grab it here because it's right cool. Here. That's in my studio, this gigantic Metallica beach ball with that date on it. Because that was a big four show in Yankee Stadium. For me, that was something different. I mean, I'd already mixed other stadiums.
But why then? So are you grew up as a big Yankee fan, or?
No, it's just that there's not a lot of shows that play there. You know, that's the whole thing, to actually be in a place that doesn't do shows. You know, lots of stadiums do shows consistently. That one doesn't. And so it was, for me, it was one of those, okay, you did something. That was a high point to the career. But I mean, again, I was already with Slayer for 10 plus years at that point in time. So, I mean, there was no problem with the gig. I wasn't nervous. So I walked out and did the job.
Yeah, but we have to have our moments to like keep us going, you know?
Well, again, the whole thing was the moment.
Yeah.
That was the whole thing. It was like, whoa, wait a second. Because we were obviously on the bill. We had two good bands with great engineers in front of us, and we had Metallica and Big Mick coming right after us. And my guys, I told them ahead of time, this is as big as it gets. Bring it. And they did. And I brought my best game, and we had an absolutely stellar show. And it was even noted by the New York Times the following day. So
do you think Babe Ruth would have been a Slayer fan?
That day he would have.
Yeah, that's the right.
A certain Boston Red Sox fan on our crew took a piss on fucking home plate.
You know what? I doubt it's the first time. The place's been there a long time.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not the first time.
Ball or two that leaked.
But, you know, it was a good show. And so, yeah, that was probably it. There's steps.
I got a buddy, his name's Kevin Street. He's a transportation dude and film stuff. And he talks about, he's a huge Slayer fan, and he went to a Slayer show and he yelled Freebird, and they played it. And he said that it's like amazing. You have no idea. They killed, they crushed it. They play Freebird every now and then, or?
No, they would play whatever. Literally, not ever during the show. Sometimes it would come out during the show. But after a while, I mean, everybody gets bored. So who knows what's going to come out at soundcheck? I mean, I stopped doing them. This is kind of pointless. But the band would go out and play, and yeah, next thing you know, they're playing cover tunes or whatever. And so, yeah, it happened. I can tell you that I got called to mix an oldies show here in Cleveland. We do it almost every year, Moondog Coronation Ball. It's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame sponsored gig. commemorating the first rock concert, realistically, all started here in Cleveland. And I would just come in to mix the bands. I didn't necessarily have any other job. If the band had didn't have an engineer, I'd step in.
Those are more fun than working for bands sometimes, because you can just fucking freelance.
Well, no, because it's a great gig. That's why I said no winner. Every time they call me, I'll definitely say sure. If I'm available, I'm there. Because it's super simple. But I remember the Doobie Brothers were headlining that particular one. And I want to say, I had a couple of really oldie acts that were on beforehand that I was taking care of. And I was walking out the front of house and some guy in the crowd stood up and yelled, "Slayer!" And I just looked over at him. I go, "Really, dude, here?" And how old are you? I don't know if he recognized me or whether it was just an instinctual reaction. But it was right when I was right there. I've heard Freebird yelled at Slayer shows once or twice. I've seen the band play it once or twice.
Oh, my friend loves the story because he's like, "I'm the one who yelled it." And he goes, "And dude, the whole crowd went crazy because you have no idea how good it was. I was told it's online. So if it is, I'll post it here."
It's probably archived somewhere. We'll just say that. It is probably archived somewhere. I'm not exactly sure where.
Do you remember your first Ozfest gig, Attaboy? The very first one?
Yeah. I mean, I was actually working as a stagehand that day because I knew that the shop wasn't going to get us tickets when I worked for Light and Sound Design. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go play hooky and be a stagehand. So then I get paid to watch the show. You know, and I knew all the guys. And then once again, somebody was fucked up on fucking something and got fired that day. And they're like, you know, and I was there. And they're like, "Hey, take the kid.
This is the secret to Attaboy's success. Some guy got booted.
Dude, I have been on more jobs for people being fucked up on drugs than anything. Fucking, I ended up on Prince on that. I ended up on Ricky Martin because of that. I ran on Nine Inch Nails. Dude, I have been on fucking so many gigs because people have been fucked up. And they're like, you know, I'd like walk into PRG or some other shop. And they'd be like, "Hey, what are you doing right now?" And I'm like, "What?" "Well, so-and-so just got fucking shit canned." I'm like, "Oh, you got to be kidding me." You know, and you never know how you're going to get your gig. You know, I never think I'd be working for a lot of these bands or at the time. It was like, but yeah, that's just the way it was. But that was with Ozfest. I was working as a stagehand. It was their third show on 99. And, you know, the shop wouldn't let me out of the fucking, they weren't going to put me on the road because I was, you know, they've pigeonholed you. You know how it is, like back in L.A. It was like, you know, you want to go on the road. No, you know, because you do all the shit jobs nobody else is going to do. We're not going to let go of you.
Yeah.
So they weren't going to champion me to go out and be something better or anything.
You don't know how hard it is to find everybody to do the shit jobs.
Yeah. So
Is sound the same way? They keep you guys there? Or?
I've always worked for the band. I've never worked for a company.
Yeah, I worked for for LSD, and I did not want to be a lighting dude. No offense there, Attaboy. But they fucking broke all day, man. So you'd be there stuck there fixing them. So, and everybody's cussing and trying to fix these stupid lights. So Carpenter, that's where it's at.
You first build in, last out every day. Yeah.
You know. So that was, so, you know, at the end of halfway through the day, they're like, "Well, we'll have production call LSD and just we'll have production tell them what they want, and that we want this kid." And that's how that started. Because then, you know, Opie was the production manager, and I got introduced to him that afternoon. And they're like, "Yeah, tomorrow morning, you know, you have your bags packed." And sure enough, I was on a playing to Charlotte. And it was funny because, so Charlotte, North Carolina was my first day on a major rock tour. I'd done all, like smaller stuff and shit, but in some of that size I hadn't done yet. And the last time I had been to the Blockbuster Amphitheater in Charlotte, I was seeing Ozzy on the No More Tours tour in 92, thinking, well, this is probably the last time I'll see Ozzy again. Here it is, my first day on a tour, and I'm now working for the original Black Sabbath, out of all things.
Yeah, pretty cool.
You know, fucking 7 years later. So, it's, you know, you never know how these things are going to line up when it all happens. You know, and then I just rolled with it. Ozfest was an attrition tour. So it was more like, it wasn't if you did great, if you just survived it, you know, and if you kept going. And then if you wanted to go back.
Every player tour was an attrition tour.
Yeah. So it was the following year when we did 2000. And then because I did the Deadlight, well, I did the thing with Chad. And then because they were out playing second stage. And I was the dimmer guy on the lighting rig for main stage. Fuck, man. Like, we, once again, third show, we're at Nashville. But this time I'm doing racks and all this shit. And we have Pantera and Ozzy and all these other bands. But man, that tour, when it first started, it sucked. We had two guys walk off on us that were from, because a lot of us were from the Nashville shop. So we were five guys. We were supposed to be six. Two thirds through the night, two of our guys fucking bolted. They just called up their fucking cousins and had to pick them up, and they grabbed all their shit off the bus and left. So we did loadout with fucking me, Tom Horton, and this other cat. And it was like, at the end of the night, I'm fucking almost ready to crawl up in a fetal position and start crying and saying, I want to go home too, man. Fuck this shit. This sucks. You know, but you took your beatings and you kept going, and, you know, we ended up getting through it.
See, those are the nights where you're lucky that you got that bag filled of dildos that are 12 inches and stuff.
Dude, that's how you're being pelted with the fucking things, man. I mean, nobody would let up on us, man. Nobody gave a shit. You know, but you still did it. You did it. You got through it. And then after a while, you forgot how, you know, why it was so tough. The Ozfest tours are great because once you learned that style of touring and that intensity, everything else was just cake. So you hear people bitching and moaning about things, and you're like, dude, this shit's easy. You just have to be prepared. You have to be ready to go. You know, it would expose the people that dicked around all day.
Yeah.
Versus going, let's get it done and just fucking be over with it. Why take all day when it could take 3 hours? So the last Ozfest I did was 04, and me and Tim were on it together. And because Tim was doing Slayer and I was, you know, crew chief, that was my third year of being crew chief on it. We were loading in at 8 a.m. and we had lights, sound, video, backline, everything up and line checked in 2 hours and 35 minutes every day. I mean, think about it. We could roll in at 6 o'clock and be ready for doors with a six truck production if we wanted to.
Yeah, that's
good. We were just doing Sabbath.
That was a fun tour. I will say that.
And at that point, we were the old man stage because for years, we used to want to be on main stage. And then by that point, we were the old, you know, it was like the second stage was where that was all happening. It was all the younger bands and the kids, and they were all partying together and hanging out. All of our guys were all old farts. So it's like, you know, as soon as they got done playing, on the bus, next city, you know, fucking, you know, Slayer was done. They took off, split. Priest, they did their show on the bus, they split. And then we'd be walking years, past, you know, production crew would be walking to the buses after showers and everything. People still be hanging. It'd be nothing but a fucking black parking lot when we went on that last one. Everybody was gone, you know.
See, I did 05 with Mudvayne. It was Iron Maiden, Ozzy, Mudvayne. I can't remember who the else was on it. Shadows Fall, a few others. And that year, there was a pretty good hang that year. I mean, obviously, Ozzy and Maiden didn't stick around. You know, Maiden got a flight every night. You know, they were flying every place. And Ozzy was, I don't actually know if Ozzy was jetting everywhere or not, probably. But everybody aside from them hung out that year. It was pretty good. Second stage would come over and hang out with main stage and vice versa. Rob Zombie was on it that year on second stage. And it was a pretty good hang.
Yeah. I mean, there was certain years where, cause like we had like, you know, in 03, we had like, you know, Disturbed and Korn and Marilyn Manson and all those people. And Zakk Wylde was, he was at his height of being Zakk. So when he was, he had a snoot full of God knows what, you know, 100 beers in his system, he'd go terrorize other people, you know, all sorts of stupid shit. But, you know, those Ozfests, those were some funny gigs, man.
I did 2000, 2001, 2005. And those are three of the best summers I've ever had.
I have no doubt. Yeah.
They're great summers.
Oh, to go back to our first podcast, Joel, it wasn't Fuji. It wasn't him being bedded to swim naked out behind the PNC place, amphitheater in Pittsburgh. Jersey? It was McGee. A whole bunch of people were throwing down for McGee to do it in some pond in Germany.
To get naked to swim around?
Yeah, to swim around to this little island or something in the middle of like some place in Germany. I don't know if McGee did it or not.
Well, I mean, want me to text him right now and find out if he did it?
Yeah, fucking. Right. Like, hey, did you get better money to go fucking swimming naked in the fucking pool in Germany?
We're trying to settle a 10-year-old bet.
We should all text him at the same time. He's gonna be like, "What the fuck are you? Who are you talking? What's going on?"
Let's see. Where is he at here? There
he is. Okay, everybody, let's find out the end of the story.
Yeah.
What happened?
Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe by clicking the round button on the bottom right. To learn more about me or the guests on the show, go to joelrody.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. The handle's Joel Rody. And don't forget, when you party like a rock star, don't be a dick.